In terms of when we went over the structure for the day, preparing, one of the things was for me to talk about Tudong in India, Ajahn Jayasaro and myself went without any lay people or any kind of props or support, going to in another country, and India, which is if you want to experience uncertainty, then it's sort of uncertainty on steroids. So we arranged for tickets to the idea was that we would fly into Calcutta, change planes, fly to Benares. We had tickets to Benares, and then we would walk from Benares, from the airport to the holy site in Sarnath, and then walk to Bodh Gaya, then walk to Rajgir, Nalanda, then Patna, which is on the Ganges River. There's a city there, and we had a plane ticket from Patna back to Calcutta for our trip back to Bangkok. And so we get on the plane in Bangkok, and we land in Calcutta, and we get off the plane, go into the terminal, and of course it's total chaos, and Air India is on strike. What do we do? Everybody was bombarding the ticket officers with... you couldn't hardly talk with them, and everything was totally chaotic. And we tried to sort of ask around, and then finally we went and sat at the... just sat meditation in the terminal near the ticket office for Air India. And after sitting meditation there for a while, then one of the people who worked at the ticket office came over and asked, is there any way we can help you? And said, well, we're we flew in. We don't have. We're supposed to be on a flight to Benares So anyway, talking back, I said, well, you in order to validate that ticket, there's going to be a flight tomorrow. You just have to go into the ticket office in Calcutta and then come out after. I said, well, we have no money. He said, well, it's only, however many paisa or, rupee to go into the, just to get the bus in. I said, no, it's not that we don't have a little money. We don't have any money. We are Buddhist monks. We don't touch money, we don't handle money. They said, oh. and then he ended up sort of saying, he said, well, I could get you on the flight to Patna tomorrow morning without having you. I could make that happen. So I said, okay, well, we'll change the whole plan and we'll figure out the rest later. So we said, okay, tomorrow morning. So we went in, we got it sorted out. It was tomorrow in the afternoon. There was a flight to Patna, so okay, we'll get on that. So then we had to go find a place to stay. We went and found, just wandered out of the airport and wandered off into the area, neighborhood, found a Hindu temple, asked to spend the night. Nobody spoke English. We spent the night and covered in mosquito bites next morning. It was just so many mosquitoes. I mean, I grew up in northern Canada, and I know what mosquitoes are like. And this was worse. And because it all came up in welts. And so anyway, so it looked like the two of us had got measles.
It's only the first day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we didn't even got anywhere yet. Yeah. So then, walk back to the airport, get on the plane. We end up in Patna late afternoon. And then we've got to try to figure out, where's the airport, and then where's the road that's going to take us to Nalanda. So we got that figured out. This is days before GPS, and you just sort of look on your smartphone and see where things are. But it ended up, it was the opposite end of Patna, so we had to walk through Patna. We finally sort of got to the outskirts of Patna. It's probably about 11 o'clock at night. We'd been walking about 11 o'clock or midnight, and we spent the night in an Islamic cemetery. Mm-hmm. And they were happy to let us stay in this shelter. In the cemetery, so we finally got settled, and then early morning comes along, and the imam was doing his chanting first thing, so discombobulated, and then we managed to just start walking early in the morning. Again, not really, you have to trust. You have to trust Allah, and also in India, we had heard that already. That generally in India, they won't have an early morning meal; they have a very light kind of breakfast, some sort of here, and then so nobody really cooks first thing in the morning. So there's no point in going alms round in the early morning like you do in Thailand. Because Thais cook rice and eat first thing in the morning. But they don't do that in India. So you've got to figure out or have a sense of what the customs are. And then if it's cool and we're not going to get any food anyway, there's no point in going alms round. Let's just get on the road and start walking. And then as it gets around probably about 9:30 or something, then find a village and go wandering for alms. And mostly people didn't recognize what you were, because Buddhist monks are not ordinary, but they recognize you as some sort of a sadhu, some sort of a religious seeker. In India, respects religious seekers. So what we did, before we left, we went to the Indian Tourist Bureau in Bangkok, and we asked them to write out a little sort of card, which we laminated, and it said, we're Buddhist monks on pilgrimage to the holy sites. We eat one meal a day that's offered by lay people. We don't accept money. Just give us who you are, what you do, and when people start asking and coming up, then you sort of show that to them, and it worked all the time, and people were. Oh, then they figured it out. This is what this kind of sadhu does. And we got looked after really well. What was really interesting was that you know, you're wandering in the Indian countryside. It's the poorest part of India. Bihar is considered very poor, as well as the most dangerous. But people were really warm and friendly and looked after us. And in some places, made sure that we didn't stay outside. Saying that the villagers said, no, this is dangerous. You have to come into the village and stay in there. Oftentimes there's Hindu shrines around, and so that you stay at a Hindu shrine. It's easy to do. Or schools or people's barns or all sorts of things. So we got treated as religious seekers in the Indian countryside. And then when we got to the holy sites, it was like you're either treated as a tourist or ignored. So you'd be, people were following around, begging from you, pestering, whatever. Or there wasn't a perception of doing anything because you were just some other Buddhist monk. And most of the Buddhist monks that go through tend to be with a group of pilgrims or, whatever. So there tend not to be recognized as a samana, as a religious seeker. So that was interesting. So just wandering the countryside, sort of going to these sites. So the first place that we got to was Nalanda, and there's a Thai temple there. And when we got there, the abbot wasn't going to let us stay. We weren't paying customers. And there was two groups of kind of Thai pilgrims coming, so that we were just kind of scruffy add-ons. Finally, we kind of prevailed, and because we were pretty blistered and sore and tired, and it was. It was good to have a bit of a break from being on the road. And we woke up the next morning and we were in this little shrine in the temple, and we heard a whole sort of kerfuffle of people coming in during the night. And then we got up in the morning and those two groups came. One group was led by Ajahn Khun, who was the abbot of one of the branch monasteries of Wat Bapong. He was leading a group on pilgrimage. The other one was an even more senior monk, who was the abbot he was contemporary to Ajahn Chah. He had several monasteries of his own that I'd stayed at, and he had wanted to offer his monasteries to be branch monasteries of Wat Bapong. Mm-hmm. Tremendous mutual respect between his monasteries and Ajahn Chah's. But Ajahn Chah sort of said, we're kind of contemporary. It doesn't feel right. We can exchange monks. People can go back and forth. But anyway, I knew the two monks who had the group there. Then they start asking you, what are you doing? So we explained to them, and then also said, there was a bit of a snafu in Calcutta, and that we'd have to figure out how to get to because we'd used up our ticket. So we still had the ticket from Patna to back to Calcutta, but we'd use the sort of Calcutta Benares. They'd taken us to Patna, so with it, and so we had to would have had to figure out how are we going to get from Benares to Patna to get our plane back again, and so the Jen Kuhn sort of said, "Oh, that's no problem. We'll just tell the lay people, and you know, we're going to further on in our pilgrimage, we're going there. We'll leave some offerings at the Thai temple there, and we'll ask the abbot there to arrange for transportation for you to get back to Patna." things happen, and when you sort of give yourself the opportunity to experience that uncertainty, and things, if I'd tried to figure it out, I would never have been able to do it. But you just sort of, you kind of try, okay, something's going to happen. Something, so that we wandered and, spent time in different places, as I said, whether it was in temples, Hindu temples, Buddhist temples, schools, barns, the whole range of things. And people are just incredibly kind. And then when we made it to Bodh Gaya, then Ajahn Jayasaro said, "Gee, this is taking longer than I thought. I made this aditana, this determination, to walk the whole way. And, I think I'm going to have to get going, tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. We're going to have to get going in order to make it to Benares in time." And I started thinking, but I didn't make that determination. So I said, I really want to just spend more time in Bodh Gaya and do pujas, and said, I'll meet you there and I'll get all the things organized for us to get back. So he said, you don't have to worry about that. So he said, okay, meet you at the Thai temple in Sarnath. And I started going really every day, going to the, I can't remember how many days I stayed, but every day, several times a day, going and doing pujas and meditation. And then this Indian man came up to me, he just started asking questions and talking to me. And he had a small business in Bodh Gaya, and he wanted to follow me. I said, I'm not looking for a follower. And anyway, it was impossible. And it was really, one of the things I was talking with him was really interesting, because he said, I've been observing your etiquette. And he said, I grew up in a Kshatriya clan, and your etiquette and the way you do things is very similar to how I've been grew up and how I was taught. I said, well, that's not strange, because all of our kind of minor rules and training and etiquette come from the Buddha, and he was a Kshatriya, he was a warrior caste, and the Buddha used that as a template to give a standard of conduct that was, say, acceptable in Indian society and culture. So that was it was a really interesting thing to learn. He was interested, and then we ended up taking a train and getting part of the way, and then walking further along to get to Benares. So he ended up taking me to Sarnath, and then he took me into Benares, and I got to see the Because Benares itself has been a pilgrimage site for Hindus for maybe 4,000 years. It's a this amazing sort of place in and of itself. So those are some Indian stories on Tudong. Another sidebar of Indian Tudong is the Ajahn Jaya Sarwar's British, and so he, you know, you're walking, and you know the things you end up talking about are sometimes you never quite know what's going to pop up in a conversation. So he started, because Indians are cricket mad, and so then he spent a lot of time trying to explain cricket so I could understand what, trying to get me to understand cricket. It's part of my religious practice. Oh my gosh, yes. It's absolutely everywhere. And there, and if there's, you know, the whole country stops. And certain big cricket games, big cricket matches.